Hello everyone, Nexa here at Evolving RPG, bringing you another podcast. I am joined with Grayton.
Welcome back everyone.
And today we're going to be discussing creative brainstorming. Grayton will be leading the discussion, and I will be chiming in as I see fit.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that introduction, Nexa. This is kind of a free-form conversation about creative brainstorming. I recently had a situation where I did reach out for some help with a campaign that I'm running. It's a group that's been going for a couple of years, and I thought it'd be interesting to share some of the thoughts and that process that went into developing this campaign, and then how it started out as a little small adventure, just to get, do we want to do this? Do we want to play? It's a couple of years ago when this got started, and then it kind of evolved into a campaign. And then I had these ideas of what I want to do, but then it seemed like I kind of ran astray, ran out of steam. You know, it's everything I was thinking of, I had done. So what do you do next? So I thought it'd be interesting to sit down with my good friend Nexa and go over this process. So if you're thinking about running a D&D game or any type of game, you know, whether it be Pathfinder, Starfinder, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Other Strangeness, which I ran recently after a very long absence from that game, Marvel Superheroes, whatever game it may be, whatever it is you want to do, Mutants Masterminds, you name it. You know, that I think this idea process and how to take a story that's in your head and put that out there for your friends or other people that you want to share that experience with and run a game for them. So I think kind of starting at where I kind of get the idea for a campaign, it's usually revolving around a particular one-shot adventure. I'm kind of thinking of something I want to do. It's going to be, I thought it'd be cool, you know, hey, we go into a dungeon. Let's run that through. Let's get a party together. We're going to go into a dungeon. I want to bring up the old monsters, rust monsters, things like that, you know. You don't see very often anymore in high fantasy fiction. These are the old school creatures and monsters. And
if you don't mind me chiming in, why do you say one shot?
I think with starting that off in this particular case, it's just kind of see how the group gels. Is the idea going to take off? Is everyone interested in it? Because you'll get players, and this has happened to me, and I know Nexa, you've seen this too, where players come in, players will go. New ones will come in, some will exit. Some of them will come back after an absence. Others just, you know, life changes and they just don't have the opportunity to play or the desire to play. So the one shot, I think, is a good way to get things kind of rolling, get your part, especially if it's someone, if they haven't played together or if they've been playing together for a long time, but maybe you're running something else. That in this particular situation, they've been playing TSR's Marvel Superheroes for years. I think that campaign ran for something along 7 years when I kind of came in catching the tail end of that and started running D&D because I wanted to do something else. So I decided that I wanted a dungeon set. It was going to be like a little one shot. Get them running and doing something that's easy for me to launch them all in, see how everybody gels. Do they like their characters? You know, it's this idea of what you want to play in the game, especially if it's a longer campaign. Because I want people to enjoy what they're doing. And
well, just to interject again, just so that we actually level set for everyone listening, how would you define a one-shot?
One-shot. Okay, one-shot's going to be something you're going to do in... That's a really good question, Nexa. Thank you. It's going to be something you're going to play in a night. It's a one setting or one sitting. Anywhere from about 4, 5, maybe 6 hours, depending on how much time you allocate for the game. So it's going to be something you're going to, and I've run into this problem when I've tried to run them before, where I cram more into the idea than can be accomplished in 4, 5, or 6 hours in one game setting. And it ends up going to a second night, a third night. Not really, you could say that it's a little, that gets kind of into module land, where it's a couple game sessions, as opposed to a one shot, where it's going to be, you know what, we're sitting down, we're getting an idea out, and we're going to have this thing all wrapped up by the end of the night. You know, you're in, you're out. You're not going to be doing a lot of deep dives into things. I have one that is my go-to one shot that I wrote. And it is something I use to get new players started in the game, or if I need to fill in for a group. It's an adventure I can throw out there real quick, and it involves some orcs attacking a small farming community, taking hostages. The heroes, along their travels, show up. Town needs help. So it basically can be wrapped up in a couple hours because it starts off with some light RP. You're adding in. The townspeople need help. There's a villain he isn't really... He isn't going to challenge the players. He's just there to add some flavor to the environment that not everyone is heroic and going to be out there to help people. And this particular encounter, you know, he wants nothing to do with this farmer's issue. He doesn't care. Or if he offers him money, he's like, you can't afford my skills. And he'll kind of rudely suggest he go talk to the player characters who are in the same inn. So they get a little bit of RP banter between, you know, there's the bark or the innkeeper. There's this antagonist that is there basically to show the players that not everyone's nice. You're going to run into conflict. Do they want to engage him? And then the farmer who needs help. So they get some light RP in. So it doesn't take a long time. But it's a fairly quick launch into it. So they get a chance to kind of flex their role-playing muscles, get into their kind of personality of their characters and how they would react to something like this. Then that launches into the next set where it's you have to find out where everyone is. And now you're using your skills. And how do I find these orcs somewhere out in the forest? What do we do? And it broke down that now you're getting into some of the details on the character sheet. And what can I do? Then finally, you find the orcs. You have to go in there and slay the orcs, rescue the innocent people, and bring them back to the bring them back home. So you get the combat. The idea behind this, and the reason it's a go-to, is it's fairly universal. It's concepts that everyone can kind of get their head wrapped around. We are the hero, whether they've read a lot of novels set in the D&D universe or just fantasy in general, they get the overall concept that I'm a fantasy hero. There's going to be orc, which is your kind of typical villain in a lot of fantasy writing. And it's just, you can substitute the creatures. And this is a plot that's fairly standard. You know, there's nothing really deep in this. This is something I'm sure other people have come up with to run, but it works well as kind of an intro adventure, just to get new players used to, in this case, 5e. This could easily be taken, transplanted into any other game. I once joked that you could actually take anything, put space in front of it, and then run it for Starfinder. So it's because you literally have space goblins. So I can take whatever it is, you know, just tweak the names a little bit and boom, you're in space and Starfinder doing these things. But it's generating the idea behind it is that it gets everyone involved. They hit the ground running and they're able to dig into their character, things that are not on the page, like how the character is going to react to the world around them. The skill sets that don't deal with combat, what are these skills? What are the proficiencies all about? And then you get into the combat where you get to take out the toys and actually, you know, swing swords and throw some spells around. So the concept for that was I needed something that was going to be easy to get. It was written to get a new player started in the game. I wanted something that was going to have interesting concepts, a little bit of adventure, and add some concept of teaching them how role-playing works. In a light role-play intro where they get to pretend to be that character and kind of figure out how they're going to do that. What kind of player are they going to be? So those one-shots are good if you are looking to start up a new group. I kind of enjoyed that. Everyone thinks these grand campaigns. And a previous way I used to do things when I ran Marvel Superheroes was it was a whole bunch of one-shots. When I wasn't sure what to do, I didn't know where I wanted to go with the heroes. I wasn't exactly sure what direction I wanted to go in, but they wanted to play. And so I was like, okay, I'll put a bunch of unconnected. And that's the thing. One shots a lot of times aren't really connected to anything else. It's going to be something that's going to start and finish here, and then you're moving on. It's a side quest. In this point, it was actually the launching for a larger campaign and larger interactions with characters. But I used to take a bunch of one shots because they were fairly easy to put together. And, you know, I didn't have to go into a lot of detail. So my game prep was a little bit easier, and they would be unconnected. There's no interaction that I envisioned at the beginning with them. But then as you go through a couple of them, I would then go back. And as I started to get an idea of what I wanted to do, look for the common themes. Where can I connect these? What came up? I go back to my notes. Did they mention something that happened? Or did I inject something that says, hey, wait a minute, that's kind of foreshadowing an event that's coming up later on. So I then strung all those one-shot adventures into something bigger as that began to shape a campaign. So, and it worked well. If I didn't necessarily know the whole plan for what the overarching storyline is going to be, these one shots made it really easy. And it's going to make your job as DM a little bit easier. And you can always go back and find the connections between them to weave a bigger story that can lead to greater things. And then keep your notes. I've got journals that my notes are in. I keep those, I date them, not only for, the interest of going back and saying, hey, we started this game 4 years ago. Can you believe that? What were we doing 4 years ago? But also so I can kind of organize where all this comes in, because you're journaling it, you're writing your ideas out, and then you have the gameplay, and then I take notes of what happens during play. Then I'll have new ideas. Well, maybe the new ideas will replace something that was written before. So, by dating that, I can kind of keep things more or less organized where I was in my creative process.
I was just going to chime in and say, by taking notes, that will help with brainstorming new ideas, because players, living, breathing, they have a way of throwing curveballs that you might not have decided to go in a certain direction, but the players may make you go in that direction. So it's definitely good for all DMs to take notes of PCs and player interactions. And of cats,
yes. Again, if you have listened to my previous ones, you know my sidekick, partner in crime here. My cat often likes to lend some commentary. He is often involved in our gaming process because he just kind of injects himself in there. So it's just, I think you bring a good point that you want to write these things down. And I kick myself because I know I've lost notes over the years, you know, through multiple moves, old spiral-bound notebooks, where I remember putting characters together, writing these things out, jotting down ideas for concepts I hadn't used. And unfortunately, through multiple moves, they're lost. You could look at typing notes out. For me, freehanding it seems to be a better creative process for me. And each group has its own journal or journals. And I like to get cool fantasy themed journals and start kind of working through the process. And it's jotting down notes. It's just, and not even all of it's going to get used. I actually had ideas where I jotted down things where I intended to use it, and it never came up. It never came in. I wrote one with a huge background for a potential antagonist for the players, and it just never came up. That character just didn't fit, as like Nexus said, some of the curveballs came up, we went different directions, ended up using it as a hook for a player who in his background there was some sort of scandal and he had to leave. Well, I wrote it that there was a murder mystery and that his mentor had found out the truth. His mentor was killed, so he fled to save the truth, and he has been trying to figure out what that truth was. His master didn't get a chance to relay it to him, but the villains think he does know. They can't take the chance, so they've been looking for him. Well, meanwhile, he's been adventuring, and so And unfortunately, that player ended up leaving our group. But that storyline's still out there, and some of it's foreshadowing. But good way to start. It's going to make your creative job a little bit easier, is a one-shot. If you're not going to run a published adventure, now this all assumes you're not running a published adventure. That's, we've talked a little bit about how we modify published adventures for your own style of play. I recently had a conversation with a friend of mine who is running a Curse of Strahd game, and that DM came up with some ideas that I'm like, oh, I wish I would have thought of that. You know, that sounds really cool. You know, I went a different direction, and my players are enjoying it, but they had a different interpretation. So that's a little bit different process. We have a previous podcast where we talk about that. But one shots, great way to get you moving, get the creative juices flowing, because you're not going to have a lot of detail you have to dig into. It's something you're going to work to basically fill a couple hours of gameplay. And I think when you focus on that and break it down to little bite-sized chunks, your players will be happy with it. You know, they're not, they may not know all of the ins and outs of the storyline, but characters in a world aren't going to know that. We don't know how everything in the world works, and our characters aren't going to either. As DM, you're the one stitching that together, or as game master, whatever you're doing with that creative process, kind of working that and weaving that together. So one shot's a great way to get started on an idea. So to kind of reduce the load, and then you can always go back and say, well, what are the common themes? What do I like? What works? What doesn't work? What held the player's interest? What didn't? And then that can lead you into the campaign. And several of the DMs that I know are running their own Nexa. I mean, a game with his. He's running his own campaign. Another DM, Kirby, I was in his game. That was a homebrew campaign. And there's others where it's been adventures where they're writing it, they're coming up with it sometimes as they go. They've just said, hey, where I'm gonna wing, I'm gonna leave it up to you guys. You all tell me where the party wants to go. I'm gonna leave it up to the party. Players, you're all gonna tell me where you want to go with it. I'm not going to script it out. And that's cool. You know, that's one way of doing things. I think for me, it doesn't quite, I need a little more structure than that. I need to have an idea of where I'm going. And that's where I kind of lead into my campaigns. Where, how many encounters are you going to have? I really don't have a formula that I follow. It's kind of what feels right when I'm putting it together. The campaign that I wrapped up after a couple of years, last summer, that campaign, it was one where I had an idea, and I my personal style, when I'm looking at a big storyline, like a campaign is going to be running a long period of time. This may be several game sessions. This could be several months of real time. It can be a fairly short amount of time in game, though, which is something you do have to kind of keep track of. And how much time, now, no one likes to meticulously track down like every long rest. How many days did you stay in town? I a lot of times approximate.
Well, I mean, there are some people who do like to do that.
Yes, yes, if you do.
They like the nuance and the bookkeeping aspect of it. So it really depends on the person. But yeah, I could agree in general, no one likes to track that stuff.
Yeah, well, half the time, to be honest with you, I wish I would. It's part of it is my own discipline. The game gets rolling. We're a couple sessions into it. I'm like, okay, wait a minute. How long have we been here? How long have we been doing this? And I'm running that a campaign right now where I actually, there's going to be an asteroid impact. And they've done some research and consulted with some people, and they know it's like 8 days. Well, now I really had to keep track of that. Well, it was getting away from me. And I was like, oh man, I got to remember to write this down. So it's a detail a lot of times I forget to track. I don't do it. And it would be a little bit easier. So I end up by default having to, you know, approximate how much time. So more power to you. You would be more organized than I if you're able to do that. So it's just and find your style. I mean, it's not something that I, a lot of times it's, unless the number of days is specific to the game in a particular scenario, it may not really factor in that much.
Well, I want to touch on one thing, because you had said something well, since it is creative brainstorming, one of the things that I try to do in a game, because I do think you need to strike a good balance. And so my rule of thumb is, and anyone can try it if they want, but I go by the 2-2-2. I suppose you could do 3-3-3, but anyway, in any game that I'm running, depending on what I've done, I have basically two.
I'm actually getting a little feedback from you, Greg.
Is that better?
Thank you. That's better. So I have the, it's basically role playing is one. Combat is another one. And then some type of puzzle. So what I would recommend a person do who's running a game is to have like basically 6 cards, or you can do 9 cards. But you have, you know, you have basically 2 role plays. 2 combats and 2 puzzles. And so basically you would just pull one of those cards out.
Okay.
Literally or virtually or figuratively. But once you use that, then try not to use it again until you cycle through the rest, because I do think there becomes a fatigue if it's always combat.
Oh yeah.
Or if it's always role playing. Or if it's always puzzles. I think you want to mix it up a little bit so that the players can enjoy every aspect of the game. Because combat is by far the most meticulous. It's like how you said, tracking, how long they've rested. There's so much detail 9 out of 10 times based on combat, because there's so much rules about it. Initiative, turn order, what all the actions you can do. So it's pretty well defined. But I think role playing, you can get a chance to shine. And then, you know, puzzles, I just think they're really good where it's problem solving.
Oh no, I definitely agree. You know, if you get players that are into it, and I unfortunately I've been in games where I know the DM has put a lot of work into the puzzles and the party's not into it. It ends up like there's 2 of us and we're okay, we're trying to figure this thing out. And the other player's like, okay, can I just roll a wisdom check and figure? I'm like, no, you can't figure it out that way. It's a puzzle. We, the people that play in the characters, have to figure this out. You know, we got to put our heads together and come up with a solution. But I do like adding puzzles and other things. And I think, yeah, if you can find a formula that works for you, definitely. I probably need to look back at my own game design and figure out, okay, how work out that theme. You know, I try to split up game sessions with combat and RP so it's not too heavy on one or the other, that it mixes up a little bit more. But and sometimes the story just doesn't drive that way. But I do like the formula idea that you came up with. So
yeah, I just think it adds for a nice balance, because like I said, I don't think anyone wants all role-playing or all puzzles or all combat, but I do think you want a nice mixture. I just think most of the players that we play with, they definitely like combat. They like to flex their muscles, but then again, I think some of them like puzzles, some of them like role-playing, so you want to make sure everyone gets a little bit of something that they can enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, with the group I have now, it is... they do like the combat, you know, and arguably that's a 5e game. And a lot of the 5e, when you look at the character descriptions, a lot of that is built around combat. And with some of it, you can get into different types of characters if it's going to be a little more role-playing based or more either espionage or more of a dramatic bend to it than an actual fighting or combat-based storyline. I do have one player in particular in a game who's very much, and he's called it out and said, you know, I really see too much of the role-playing where it's just rolling dice. He's like, I want to get into the role-playing where I'm exploring my character and interacting with people and get them kind of into things, get this moving and like, hey, let's interact as opposed to rolling initiative and fighting. He does enjoy the combat, but he's really in it more for the social interaction of it. He wants to run the game. He wants to explore the character, his origins, what's behind him, and you know what makes his character tick. So I have to make sure I compensate. Other players, and this is some feedback I got recently, because I was trying something a little different. I wrapped up this campaign last summer, and we had a big combat. There was a big fight. They're at a castle, and they're fighting hordes of different enemies. It went really well. It was broken up into different phases. How well they did kind of explained how the background was doing. If they did very well in an encounter, then, hey, the troops are rallied. Some of the encounters didn't go as well. Okay, you know, they're losing some ground. It was adding dramatic tension to the scenario. And it was based on how well they did it. I used that to kind of extrapolate good and bad outcomes. This current campaign that is wrapping up, I went a little bit shorter. The previous one ran about 3 years. And this one is going to go about a year, maybe a little bit more. So I did go a little bit shorter with it. They're on an island. There's this asteroid coming down. There's all kinds of things going on. But I wanted the ending to be more about this natural disaster as opposed to the villains you would typically run across. So there were villains, and they had a fight, and they encountered them, and they defeated them. But I was getting the vibe that they weren't really getting into the end of the campaign. It wasn't really resonating with all of them. It was a lot of skill checks and going through, and you know, this. There's part of a natural disaster was a meteor storm hit, and their people are trapped in buildings. You need to go help them. You need to be heroes, but not with swords. It's going to be using your mind. How do I get people out of these dangerous situations? How do I convince people that, hey, there's this thing is bad. We know it's going to be bad. They have access to information that the population of the island doesn't have, but there were different people that were either I'm going to flee, or you know what? It's not really going to be that bad. I'm not going to, you know, take any action. Who are you? You know, this is a party. They're not human. They're a half elf, a gnome, a tiefling, a dragonborn, and a half drow. So obviously there's some people gonna be a little hesitant to trust, you know, these humanoids. But the group was like, well, you know, we had this big fight, we met these villains, and then it seems kind of anticlimactic with the ending. And I was getting the vibe that it wasn't really working for them, which kind of tied into my creative process for a campaign. I kind of look at the beginning, like, how are we going to start the campaign? And then I look at, like, what kind of ending do I want to have? What's going to be the big ending? And this one was, hey, I figured out how to get them kind of hooked into the story, get it started. The ending is going to be dealing with these this humanitarian crisis that's on this island as this asteroid hits. After the impact, what are you going to do? The environment was going to be the threat. And part of it was probably just my writing style and how I did this. Probably would have done things a little bit differently in hindsight. But hindsight always is going to be 2020. You're always going to look back at what you did with that session and think, oh, I should have done that. I should have done this. I you know, didn't explain this well. That's going to happen. You're going to pre-game or post-game yourself, and try not to do too much of that, because you can always fix it. You're the DM. You can go back and tweak things. You can retcon something and just tell them, listen, I made a call and I'm going to go back and, okay, I'm going to kind of twist the story a different way. But for me, it's the campaigns. How is it beginning? How is it ending? And then I'm stitching it together to get to that end point that I want to have. But as Nexus said, you've got players. They're going to throw curveballs. They're going to come up with their own ideas, their own interpretations. They're going to ask things that you didn't think they were going to ask. They're going to want to do things you didn't think they would do. You know, just it's like, hey, I had a whole wasteland area, and I'm like, oh, it's desolate. There's nothing out there. I had monsters out there. It was a monster zone. But it really wasn't tied into the actual adventure. I wasn't really planning for them to go there. There was nothing there that they were going to need. Oh, well, we're going to go survey that area. I'm like, why? And it's like, well, we're going to check it out. I'm like, now I got to fill in this whole area. We're at the game session. Hadn't really planned that. All of the maps I have prepped, we're not really using any of those, which as part of my creative process now, I always generate a couple random maps of different types of environments, towns, roads, forests, marshes, swamps, just different environments you could run into, so that if they say, hey, we want to take a left at the fork when they're supposed to go to the right, you've got a map And again, pull that up. Like, okay, you go to the left on the, even though you might be reacting to what they do and improving this, you've got a map. You can start dragging things on there, you know, and just it's put it on there. Like, oh, here's these minis now. This is coming out here. This is how this is going. They don't know. They think this has been planned. You had this contingency planned in your head. And, you know, so I always like to have some maps available for random encounters that are going to pop up. Personally, when I'm creating a one-shot or a campaign, I'm of the school of thought, and I think there's a lot of people, because there's lots of tables for them, I don't do much with random encounters. Every encounter...
I was just about to chime in again, because I wanted to get your take on random encounters. I know we're kind of going off on a little tangent, but this is just us musing and talking a lot of this creative brainstorming out, so I'm just curious about your views on random encounters.
Oh, glad to. And I think a lot of this, we don't strip these folks. If you've listened to these before, it's just, you know, this is like if you were sitting in a room with Nexa and I, we'd all be 6 feet apart, probably wearing a mask, but, you know, because I hope everyone's being safe out there. But if we were in a room, this would be the kind of conversations that we have. Yeah, and it's just, and we enjoy these. And that's where the idea to do these podcasts came from. Because we'll be on the phone talking to one another, like, hey, why don't we share this with people? Now, there may not be another person in the earth that's going to listen to this podcast. If you do, please write a comment in there. Just let us know, hey, you listened to it, or you know what? Great tone. You ramble too much. Or you say too much. Please feel free. I'd love to hear the feedback. But in regards to random encounters, I am of the school of thought that encounters have a purpose. I don't want to drag things out, because sometimes you get into a combat, especially where now they're in a fight and the clock's ticking. But does that encounter serve a purpose to move the story forward? So I don't often use random encounters. My encounters are basically planned. The order in which they are encountered could change depending on what the players do in the story as they're going through it. I've written encounters that have never been used. That's okay. Save the idea. You wrote it out. You've got it planned. You can plug it in. You will find another circumstance where that idea will come in and fit perfectly. You're like, hey, I thought of this. This is great. I did this. And if they say, well, you know, you kind of just improv. No, hey, I wrote this like months ago. I've had to have a conversation with players. I'm like, listen, I didn't, you know, this was written a long time before X, Y, or Z happened in the game. So it wasn't me just reacting to it. But I like encounters to have a purpose in the game. So I don't like to, and I know there's tons of tables. And if you want to populate that world, I mean, I'd love to hear people's comments on what they think of random encounters and how your experience is. If you use them a lot, how do you utilize them, and how does that come out?
I agree with you in that I think there should be a purpose to the encounter. I do think you can have a random encounter per se, but it's actually a pre-planned encounter. And what I'm getting at is that perhaps the players do something that would really warrant that they should meet an encounter, but you would already have it set up. So just a hypothetical scenario. Say the players are camping in the woods on their way to the town, and one of the players decides to make an incessant amount of noise. In that situation, I do think a random encounter is warranted, like maybe a roaming bear or a roaming, you know, pack of wolves. Maybe something not life-threatening, but yet something to actually interact with the players based on the players' interaction, or based on the players' action, I should say. I do think you should probably make up some encounters to have them at the ready, and that could be your pool. Like I said, I subscribe to the 2-2-2, so maybe during some of my games, I'm more role-playing, heavy intensity, but when I want to break it up, I'll pull out one of these pre-generated encounters that may seem random, but it's really to break up I don't want to give my players all role playing and all puzzles. So, but yeah, I'm from that same school of thought that there should be a purpose. You should be able to tie it some way with the story. It just shouldn't be pick a table, roll this many guys, and that's what the players fight. I just think that feels kind of video game-ish to me.
That's kind of where I come from with it, because I look at a lot of the random encounter tables, and absolutely, if the players do something where it you're going to attract unwanted attention, sometimes the table also needs to take into account where are they. You know, it just and there's tons of tables. There's no shortage of tables, but a lot of times when I'm trying to think of okay, this is going to happen. Okay, I got to pull the book out. Let me find that table for that random encounter that I want to have. Okay, let me roll. We're kind of burn up time, and it's not moving things along. So having pre-written encounters that could happen, or just a go-to bucket of, okay, who's in the area? Some NPCs that might be around. I like to write those and just kind of say, oh, who else is in the environment as we go? And this may be characters that the players or NPCs that the players will not necessarily have to interact with. They might, but these are the people in your neighborhood, and this is who you're going to run across. And there might be villains sometimes. And it does add a little bit of a depth to it, because I don't want it to be too obvious sometimes as to what the underlying story is. So there may be encounters that seem significant, but they really don't play into the overall story arc of the campaign. But these are people that they would run into. Now, I do like to make notes of those characters, and those characters can come back. My current group has some people they encountered in their previous campaign that survived. They are not happy with the players at all, and so they've been spending a lot of time getting ready for revenge. They've got an axe to grind, and they're going to be coming for them. So I keep notes of those characters that they interact with, because those characters may not have been a huge part of that campaign, but they are going to play a big role going in the future. But yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of finding your own style and your own balance. But I think just throwing an encounter in to throw an encounter in, you know, if you got to kill some time, okay, I could see it, you know, and just say it, but it's that's usually not a problem I run into. Usually it's the opposite way. Things are going there and I'm trying to get things wrapped up at a certain time, especially people have work, school, whatever they need to say. And like, I can't play past 11 at night. Okay, we're gonna get started at 7 and we're gonna have 4 hours. And I gotta get everything I wanna get done in that 4 hour block to advance along. So it's just, I usually kind of run into a time crunch more than anything else. So I don't like throwing in encounters that are just going to kind of muddle things down, especially as I think as they get heavier. Let me know what you think of this. Like, as they get higher level, your random encounter isn't going to be some gigantic demon just happens to be walking through the countryside, you know, burning villages. It's just, you know, now you're 11th, 12th level. It's, you know, yeah, you're going to find a couple goblins running around causing trouble. You know, you might chase them away. But unless it's actually something where it's going to work, it's there's a writing tool, and I did not think to write this down, but it's referring to, I got to look it up. I will post it in the comments there. It's a writing tool where if you've got a rifle on the wall and you're writing a story and you say, well, the main character sees that rifle on the wall, the idea is that rifle has to be fired at some point. That rifle has to do something. So anything that you call attention to should play into the story in some way. Not necessarily obvious to the storyline, but they have to have a purpose if you're taking the time to call it out. Now, with that being said, sometimes when characters ask, what's that person's name? And I say, well, their name is Georgie McInmasterson. So it's, you know, they kind of know, okay, this character is not really, I'm winging it. Versus they say, well, what's your name? Oh, it's Margrave. And it's like, wait a minute. Okay. So they can kind of tell. you know, when you have something that's important to the story, because you've got that information at hand. So I do try to populate the world with a couple of people so I can drop some names in. So it's not as obvious who actually is important to the storyline, who isn't. They all have a role to play. But what are they going to do for the story overall? You know, is that innkeeper going to be important? Is he actually informing?
But that goes to, once again, your players. Is that innkeeper going to be important? Depends on your players, what your players do. Because it's actually a two-way street. It's not just you. I mean, you definitely, you being the GM, have a lot of weight. But the players have an equal amount of weight in actuality as well, because it takes both sides to tell the story and to have the adventure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it's shared storytelling. You know, the players have to feel like their actions actually matter, or else it's just, you know, they're just characters in a script, and that's not exactly what they're looking to do here. This is more interactive. I had one player in one campaign where they were dealing with a lot of townspeople and are trying to win their trust. So he used disguise self to actually create another persona of a traveler that came to the town and started interacting with people. He would split off from the group while they were doing different tasks, and he would start interacting with people, getting to know them. And over the course of this adventure, he kind of built this pseudo idea or this pseudo. Hold on 1 second, sir. I'm about to edit that. I got a alert that came up. Sorry, next time. I have to edit this out real quick here. I'm just having a slight technical glitch here.
No, I'm not going to edit it right.
Now I got to edit out. Getting air thrown here. So, okay. Good. Sorry about
not that.
That
it would be hard to do, but.
Yeah, so sorry about that. We don't edit. This is live cut, folks. You're getting everything right here. This is, you know, Evolving RPG After Dark, you know, the uncut edition, director's edition. The director's cut. So, but I hadn't planned for that. I didn't have characters or people ready for that. It's like, I didn't know he was looking to do that and create this other persona. So it was an interesting development in the game, and I had to kind of build other NPCs around that, because this player was intentionally trying to expand and kind of build a group of friends that could help influence the townspeople what the party wanted to do. So it was an interesting and exciting time. So it's just I had a lot of fun with it, because it was something I didn't think of, and I really thanked him for it. I was like, hey, this is really something interesting. I hadn't planned this, so it worked out well. So, it is going to be a little bit of a shared world. You're going to be working with the players, not necessarily against them. It's you're trying to tell a tale. You know, there's a story. We're trying to have fun. And at the end of the day, if the idea that you're working on or the adventure you're running isn't fun, if you're not enjoying it, telling it as much as the players, and you're going to get a little bit of burnout from time to time. It's going to happen. You're going to kind of run out of ideas, and it's going to be like, oh man, I don't have anything else left in my head. What else is there? What else can I do? That kind of gets into my third kind of point, moving into, you know, from you create the one shot, you're building the campaign. Okay. The campaign's been going on for a while. What happens if you run out of ideas? You know, it's like, okay, everything I thought of, I've put down, they've done it. And where are we going to go next? Especially as they get a little bit higher level, or just what direction? I've got these character concepts, but how do I weave it all together into something, into a tale that you want to tell? And for me, this was a challenge I recently had, because, you know, we're wrapping up one campaign and had an idea of what I wanted to do next, but I didn't know exactly where I wanted to take the adventure. I had some ideas, but I was really stuck. I'm like, I don't know what to do next. Now, I like to, when I wrap up a large campaign or a long, you know, several game sessions. It might take a little bit of a break. And a lot of times I do get a little bit of a break with the way our gaming group schedule works. There are other people running, so I can get 1, 2, 3 weeks in between my sessions. So it gives me some time to kind of slow down, think things through, kind of reason through, like, what are we going to do? What do I want to, what kind of fun thing would I like to do again? This asteroid idea that I've had, it's been in my head for years. I just never had a way to apply it. How do I take an asteroid, put it into an adventure? You know, I just couldn't find a way to really work that in where I felt it made sense. But I did recently. So I was kind of glad for that. And with this whole island adventure, it just worked into the storyline and it launched well. But when I got stuck recently, and we'll go into some things like, if you don't have this option, the first thing to do would be talk to other DMs that you know, and just tell them. Nexa was one of the people I reached out to and said, listen, I'm in kind of a bind. Can I bounce some ideas of what I have going? Well, can I tell you what I'm doing right now, where we're going, and I'll bounce some ideas off you. What do you think? If it was you, how would you kind of run it? You know, and I got to put my own spin on it, but it's like, hey, can you help me get things together and get myself reorganized? Like, what do you think? And so I reached out to Kirby and Nexa in this case, and both of them gave me phenomenal advice and said, well, have you, and it's also nice because you get into the campaign, you're looking at it from one angle. I'm looking at this one way, but they can help you kind of look at this from other directions. Like, hey, from on the outside looking in, have you considered X, Y, or Z? Did you think of that? And it's no, hey, I hadn't thought of approaching it from that angle. I've been kind of caught up inside of the way I've been writing it. And I hadn't thought of, you know, a particular concept or idea. And unfortunately, because some of the players could listen to this, I can't go into a lot of detail with this, but the first thing you're going to want to do is ask for help. You know, so talk to your friends and be open when they call you, if they're stuck, you know, just offer them ideas. You know, it's a creative process and we all kind of grow and learn together in it. But I was very fortunate to have people I could kind of turn to say, hey, I need an outside opinion. I need somebody who isn't involved.
And I was just going to say that's definitely good advice. I would also go a step further. In addition to talking to fellow DMs or GMs, I would maybe reach out to people who don't even have any gaming and kind of explain the story to them and saying, if you were watching a movie or a TV series, where do you think the direction of the show would go? What would make the show interesting to you? Put it like that, because sometimes a person who's not into it may even give a even different perspective.
Absolutely. I think that would be actually a really good good thing to do, because you want to get, especially someone who maybe, I've got one friend who doesn't run, he hasn't run in a very long time, but he's a writer and he's writing quite a bit, and I'll bounce ideas off of him. I have other friends that are both professional writers, screenwriters, and DMs, and they give very good critiques of story structure and how I can kind of tie themes together and what they do. Because in one case, I've got a very good friend who's a screenwriter, and when he's doing this, this is how he makes his living, and he writes professionally. But he has to structure stories a specific way, and writing a movie script is a little different than writing a novel, but it's surprisingly similar to putting a D&D game together. So you do get help from friends and whatnot. If you don't have that, you know, there's good online communities. Personally, I am very quiet when it comes to, you can follow me at Twitter at Oliver Greatome. I'm very quiet. I'm a lurker on Twitter. I follow a lot of people, and I like kind of learning what their process is. I don't like to jump in and ask for unsolicited advice from them. So it's just, I'm sure they probably would welcome it and say, hey, sure, I'd be glad to help out with that. But there are good avenues to find help online if you don't have other people that you can talk to, that are maybe all the people that are really into gaming are in your group, but as Nexus says, hey, if you know somebody who likes science fiction or fantasy, ask them, what do you think of the story that I'm telling? You know, it just, if you do,
excuse me, great Tom, but I just wanted to chime in. Sure. In addition to Twitter and those type of social medias, there's also Reddit is a very good source, and Stack Overflow is really good for techies. However, they have different overflows where they could actually talk about gaming related material. And like you said, a lot of people do the kind of lurking where they just read. They don't really interact with the community. And that's fine because there's a wealth of information that you could read on. So there's numerous resources that you could look out and find additional information. You got to do a little bit of work.
Yeah, exactly. And it again, when we say work, it's this is a labor of love. You know, my games are all labors of love. You know, it's sometimes it might get a little aggravated with players. We get a dispute about rules or a disagreement over rules, you know, and we've talked about that in previous podcasts. That's not too relevant to this one, but you know, you want to get help from people that are going to be supportive of you. You know, I try to tune out anybody who's negative about what I do, how I do things. But I have to be open to some criticism. And I did that recently, you know, just, I'm walking the walk here. So just recently after a game session, I was honest with one of the groups and said, you know, I'm not feeling everybody's really diving with this. Is this working for you? And they gave me some good feedback. It wasn't really what they were looking for. They were looking for a little more action to build up towards the climatic end. And I kind of personally put some of that on myself that, okay, I was trying to do something a little different. And it didn't quite work out as well. Now that's not, I'm not going to, you know, yeah, am I a little hurt by that? Yes. But I want to take it as a learning experience. And hey, I want to extrapolate on this and do it better next time. Because while it didn't work out here, the concept sound, maybe I just got to tweak how I do it, work on my timing a little better. You know, when you're doing something new, you're doing something for the first time, yeah, you may not necessarily get it exactly right that first time out. And I'm going to kind of shift gears. You know, I've got 2 weeks before I got to be back behind the GM screen on that one. And I've, thanks to input from Nexa, input from Kirby, I have some great ideas on how to go forward. And the adventure is going to take a interesting twist. But, you know, be open to change too. You know, when you're working with these things, when you're out of ideas, just kind of start dipping into the reservoir of your own creativity and just not be afraid to kind of go a different direction with it. You can always change things. You know, you're not committing anything to stone. If the adventure's going along, and honestly, your players don't know. I personally, in Nexa's campaign, I have no clue where we're going. I don't know what's going on. I have this sinking feeling that there's something very, very bad building up that we're not really aware of. And I'm trying in my head to connect the dots, to figure this thing out. And I don't know, maybe it's there, maybe it isn't, but it's a lot of fun to play in that game. But I don't know what's being changed as response to us. You don't need to feel like, oh, I have to stick to this script that I've written. It's just like, if it's not working, it's like, or if you're not feeling it, it's just not, yeah, it's not really the story I want to tell. You know, go in that direction. If, you know, you got to have fun doing this. DMing is a lot of work. It's hours and hours of work. I mean, although, you know, it's, over a period of time, you know, so just, I was watching some interesting comments. It's like, how much actual prep time do you do? And it was just, yeah, you know, I've been guilty, you know, of the same thing where it's like, we're supposed to start at 8:00, we're starting at 8:30 because I'm loading the maps and finishing the characters. Right, well, no, not me. Yeah, that was always just because of that. Yeah, I'm literally uploading the map, finishing the character stats, watching my clock count down as I'm like, okay, I got to get ready to go here. So it's just, you know, because it's, yeah, life gets in the way sometimes. So as much prep as you can do, but having the idea in your head of where you want to go does make that a little bit easier. If you do need to wing something, you kind of know what direction you want to work it with. And you're, if it doesn't quite work, you can always change it. You can always kind of go back and tweak it. And I've had to do that where I kind of make an adjustment to the way things go. Some of it you'll have to tell the players. Just say, hey, after this, I just have to make a slight change to the way things happened. You know, it just I'm not one that I actually had a character want to change their character. And they were in the campaign kind of moving along. Some DMs are like, no, this is the character you're stuck with. I'm a little more flexible with that. Where if someone's like, hey, listen, this, I'm just not enjoying this character. It's just, I'm just not feeling it. It seemed at the start that I was going to like it, but you know, it's, you know, the overlap with the group, I don't think is really working well. I want to change it. I'm like, okay, you can. Some changes are a little easier than others. I had one monk in my game who really liked playing Kensai when that came out in Xanathar's Guide. He's like, can I please change my monk? I want to make him a Kensai. Absolutely. We can tweak that out. So it's just, it's, you can kind of work with it and just talk to your group about that, set some guidelines on how that will work. But again, it just ties into your creative process and what story you want to tell and making sure that it's going to be fun for everybody, you included. You get to have fun too.
That's the important thing. It has to be fun for everybody.
Yeah. You know, as DMs, we're playing too. And I mentioned this in a previous podcast because I was like, well, why do you like DMing? And I'm like, well, and this was a quote from Dragon Magazine years ago that really summed up why I like running games. I like playing, like being a player in games. Don't mention that. But running, best description of it was that when you're a player, you have your turn, then you've got to wait for your turn to come back around. But when you're the DM, it's always your turn. So it's just, and that was it. I was always playing. It's just like, I get to really explore this. And I play vicariously through my NPCs. I'll have preferred enemy villains and heroes, and those are the characters that, you know, like I want to play. I drop Grey Tomes in to my campaigns. It's the Grey Tome family of characters, and so the characters are going to encounter a mage, a certain type. Most likely, there may be a Grey Tome somewhere in the city that they're in. You know, so I like to kind of pepper them in there, and that's how I can kind of inject myself into the game. So. And have some fun with it. But if you do run into the situation where you're just out of ideas, you know, take a step back. I do encourage people, read, keep up on reading verse authors. That's always going to kind of help trigger ideas, keep the creative juices flowing. But also, there's several channels on YouTube that I like to follow where I'll jump in and listen to them. I get some good advice from them. So yeah, get out there, find the ones to jive.
I also want to add, you should probably ask your players too. Just ask them, what do they want or what are they looking for or what would they like to get out of the game? That conversation should definitely be had before the game starts, but probably midway through or towards the end of one campaign, say like that. Maybe ask them again, what are you looking for? What are the goals of your character? Because from there, you can maybe springboard and get some ideas and weave that into your story.
Absolutely. I think character backgrounds are something I really like to have. And get the players to write it out. They don't have to go into a lot of details, much details they want, but that's where I'll kind of go in and dip in and pull out. I had one perfect example. I had to accommodate a player who was going to, for work reasons, have to leave the game for several weeks. They weren't going to be able to play. I'm not a big fan of having people run other players as NPCs. I don't like running them. If another player will take them over, great. But for a long period of time, I said, you know what? It's not really going to jive well. And we had a couple extra players. Party size has a lot to do with it. At that point, the party was hovering between 7 to 8 players, typically in a week, between people that were live at the table at that time and virtual. So the party was still intact without this one character playing. So I dipped into his background. And he said, well, you know, he took the Draconic bloodline for his sorcerer. I was like, okay, he had written a backstory for his character, and I was like, well, his grandfather is a blue dragon, an adult blue dragon, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute, You know, it's like, okay, the reason he's gone is his grandfather sent for him and has a job for him. So he had to leave in the middle of the night. So I said he left a note. It was coded so that you know it was him. And he said, I have to leave to take care of some family business. And what happened was his grandfather, the dragon, wanted to talk with him. He was starting to become powerful. It's one of his progeny. And he said, you know what? Your bloodline belongs to me, you know, because it's a dragon. And it was a good way to explain a character's absence. And that's kind of a recurring theme that what's his grandfather kind of do? His grandfather's watching him from afar. Not so much that he's going to get involved in things that are going on, but he sees that his progeny is getting stronger and stronger as he gets higher level. So that introduces a whole new dynamic and something that I'm going to be working story themes in with that family. So it's bringing the character's background in, because I'm not a big one to, because I was talking to Nex about this before we started recording, that it seems to be a lot of players say, oh, I'll give you a background so you can screw me over with it. It's like, no, it's not about that. You know, it's not about taking this and harming the character. It's connecting your character to the world, connecting them to the story that we're telling. You know, I think it makes a stronger bond and more entertainment value when it's the events that you do, you are actually affecting the world, and what happens to the world actually has some meaning to your character that you're playing, that it's personal to you. When you're just a character walking through the world, and we had a very good discussion about what to do if our characters died in Nex's game, you know, and just there's no way he scripted that whole conversation. And we are a whole bunch of players now talking about, like, okay, if I die, what do you do? And it's like, wait a minute, I don't want to be resurrected necessarily. You know, it's like, that's my time. I don't want to be brought back from the dead. Wait a minute, what? You don't? Who doesn't want that? So it was an interesting thing to do. So definitely ask the characters to help out and just, you know, talk a little bit about where their characters came from. You know, and, you know, you can reward them with things like that. You know, there's, I've asked the players, because they're 11th level now. And I say, you don't have to do it right now, but in the coming weeks, as we kind of continue on with these characters, I want to know what are your ideas? What's motivating your character? You started out level 1. I plan is to go to level 20. And I'm breaking that up into different tiers that are going to get us there. But I wanted to know, what's your character's motivation to get to level 20? What's driving them to do this? Are they driven by revenge? Is there a goal they want to accomplish? Is there something they want to do in the world? What's motivating them to get up every morning and keep going to get to level 20? Like, what is ultimately, when you get there and you're basically at the top of your game now, what is it that you hope to accomplish at that point? You know, and I want to work that into it, because, you know, getting those characters, you know, 1 to 11, yeah, that's a pretty big deal. This next half of it, going from 11 to 20, this is going to be a whole new level of conflict and risk and reward. You know, but what's the connection to them? I don't just want to throw monsters out there and say, there's a monster there, go fight it. So it's why? Why are you doing this? You know, what do you hope to accomplish? And when you do get to that point, what are you planning to do? So it's just, Nexa gave me great advice in our Curse of Strahd game I'm running for them. His character, his character has a goal, and the rest of the party wants to follow him through with it, you know? So it's just, I can let you elaborate on that if you like, but it's just, so ask your players for some feedback on that, and they'll kind of give you the thoughts and desires of their players, and then you can use that to create and launch adventures and whole arcs, or just an encounter. Maybe they meet someone, or you need to drop an NPC in there and you want that NPC to have some, to be a little more important. Well, this person that owns the shop happened to be the old blacksmith that was in the town when they were growing up. They grew up together. It's like they were apprenticing, and now they have their own smithy in this city that you came to. Connect the character to it. You know, it drives that conversation a little bit farther, and it makes a more memorable encounter. So, and who knows what's going to come out of that? Like Nexus said, you know, they may want to restart that friendship up. This may be a confidant. You know, what can I do to get, you know, special pricing to get magic items forged or get my equipment repaired? Or have you heard anything? You know, it's just like, what do you do with that information now? So there's some tidbits to do. If you're out of ideas, your players will have ideas. You can pull from a multitude of sources, and it's never a bad thing to say, hey, we're going to take a break. Right now, the main campaign characters, we take a break from that. I'm running alternate characters in Secrets of Saltmarsh. They exist, quote unquote, in the same world, but these two character groups are kind of separate from one another. Could I blend them together? Sure. It is an idea I shamelessly stole from Nexa, it helps out because I don't have to do all of the creative work. Secrets of Saltmarsh, or Ghosts of Saltmarsh. I always get that wrong. Secrets of Saltmarsh are actually one of the modules in that book. Ghosts of Saltmarsh has some great modules that are reprinted and updated for 5e. And I thought it'd be kind of fun to do. So I'm running those for this alt group. So I break away from the campaign. I can recharge my creative reservoirs and run some modules that I don't have to think of everything and kind of take a little bit break, still play, keep fresh on the rules, but I do that for a few weeks and then I can come back as my idea of what to do next kind of solidifies in my head. So just some techniques that I've used, you know, in determining one shots, campaigns, what to do when you're out of ideas. Hope you found this informative or at least entertaining. But if you have listened to it, please drop a comment below and, you know, love to hear your thoughts.
With that, we thank you again. Thank you, Graytone.
Oh, always glad. Always pleased to.
And as Graytone says, we would love to hear your thoughts in the comment section below or any ideas you may have for new future podcasts. Thanks, everyone, and take care.
Thanks, everybody.